Luck on Sunday, proudly sponsored by Al Basti Et Cruel Dubai.
Welcome back. You're watching Luck on Sunday. I'm delighted to welcome to the show this week Abdul Musa Adam. Abdul was born in Sudan. He managed to escape warfare in Sudan, warfare that had claimed the majority of his family. He escaped northern Sudan, then to Chad, then to Colonel Gaddafi's Libya. He rejected the entreaties of the Libyan government to fight in the Libyan Children's Army, and as such suffered persecution and torture, from which he then escaped thanks to the extraordinary kindness of a French doctor who was working at the time in that country. He ended up in what he believes to have been Marseille, where he lived rough until he was helped in Marseille by a man who took pity on him, and he then found his way underneath a lorry to Swindon, where he ended up. He then went through care system, a foster system. He found work with animals at the Greatwood Rehabilitation Centre, and ultimately he has ended up with a job in horse racing working at Kingsclere with the Andrew Balding Racing Stable, for whom he is enjoying an extraordinary and productive career. He has had dreams of being a jockey, whether those dreams are realised or not. He has come an incredibly long way in a remarkable journey, a journey that is being chronicled in a book to be released in April with the assistance of journalist and author Roswyn Jones, who has spent a lot of time in the Darfur area of Sudan and in Chad, where Abdul spent 3 years. Time for me to say a very good morning to Abdul Musa Adam and Roswyn Jones. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For joining us. And thank you, Ros, for being with us as well. It's a remarkable story, Abdul, and one that I couldn't really do justice summing up, but one which you and Ros have done a brilliant job of explaining in your book. How are you now, and how are you enjoying the UK and Kingsclere?
I am fine, and thank you. Then I did enjoy Kingsclere, so I'm happy.
You're happy now?
Yes.
One thing that strikes me reading your story is your connection with the animal, with animals. Tell me about where that started back in Sudan.
My father, he have animal. We have cow, camel, horses. So a lot of animal we have. That's why I'm start animal.
And you always felt comfortable around animals and
yes.
Wanted to be with the animals?
Yes, I've been with animal. I'm so happy.
And this was a very difficult and challenging period in Sudan when you were growing up. Just tell me a little bit about the earliest days that you can remember of your childhood.
When I grew up, a little child, my father, he got a lot of animal, cow and camel and horses. I was 6 years old. My father tried teaching me how to ride horses and animal. So then happened really bad things in Sudan. Then I ran away in Sudan, then with Chad. So now I start animal again. 2016, start animal. Calling Great World.
And so that was the first contact you'd had with horses?
Yes.
Since you'd left Sudan?
Yeah.
Ros, you're very familiar with the area of Sudan that Abdul is from. We saw a lot of news reporting of what was happening in Darfur, but I don't think we had any real understanding of the internecine warfare that was going on and how difficult it made it for families like Abdul's.
I mean, it's interesting at the moment, and I haven't had a chance to discuss this with Abdul, but President Bashir, who was the president of Sudan, they've just said that he's likely to go to the International Criminal Court at The Hague to stand trial for some of the crimes that were committed against families like Abdul's. But during that time in Sudan, when Abdul left, there was an incredible period of ethnic cleansing throughout Darfur, basically, and villages were just being decimated by helicopter gunships from the air, by the Janjaweed that would come on camels. They were just clearing huge areas, destroying villages, and obviously people like Abdul had no choice but to just walk off into the desert. You know, the first journey that Abdul made in the desert was incredible to have survived. It was incredible to survive the attack on his own village, which unfortunately he's lost his mum and his dad and his sisters. He and his brother managed to escape to the border with Chad and then into the refugee camps there. But those refugee camps are like an absolute hell on earth, really. They're nothing much more than a few sticks in the desert and some supplies of water, and there's about 1 million people that are marooned kind of along that border. So lots of people went to Libya, and that was, you know, just to try and get some work or just to try and not be a refugee in a camp for the rest of your life. So, I mean, for me, meeting Abdul's been one of the great privileges of my life, really. He's an absolute inspiration to me.
And initially, Abdul, you managed to escape with your younger brother, Yusuf, but you became parted along the way because you, being older, had to go and work and seek a way out, in a sense. Just tell me a little bit about Yusuf.
I tried to escape with him. That time I was a child. I can't manage it. I'll present, two present, one calling lady, calling Zainab. That lady saying, I can look after your brother. Mm-hmm. You can see the other guy calling Abud.
Yes.
So Abud, I escaped with him in Libya because that was refugee camp in the Chad. Then it's not too safety. Sometimes a refugee camp is bombing as well. Then me and Abud, we left Chad. Then we crossed the desert in Libya. Also in Libya, it's really awful time as well. It's Gaddafi bombing, me catching like a lot of difficult time. Then I prison in six months. They tried to have been army enjoy. I say no.
This is one of the most powerful parts of your story for me, and the story that you've written together. How old were you when you went to Libya?
I was 12 years old.
You were still only 12 years old?
Yeah.
You'd lost your parents and other members of your family. You'd separated from your brother.
I lost my parents. I was 6 years old.
Yeah. So at age 12, you go to Libya. And you...
In Libya, you come 3 years. Hmm. In Chad. Yeah.
And Colonel Gaddafi's government eventually captured you and said to you, we want you to become part of the child army in Libya, and you had the strength of character.
Yeah, because my family had been really bad. I saw that this army they does in Gaddafi, so I think no, that's why.
Because you'd seen what war had done to your family.
Yes.
At six, you rejected being part of any militia or fighting force.
No.
At the age of 12.
Yeah.
And Roz, the consequences of that are incredibly grave.
Yes. I mean, I think the plight for black Africans in Libya at that time, and actually that continues to now in the absolute chaos that's happening at the moment, is almost horrendous because the rebel armies believe that most black Africans are mercenaries, so you're persecuted by that side. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the government troops are trying to basically conscript black Africans to join their army. So that people were just trapped in the middle. You were going to be persecuted by one side or the other. So, in fact, Abud, who Abdul escaped with, he was really taken off in the end by rebels who thought he was a conscript, whereas Abdul was imprisoned and, you know, and tortured. And at the age of 12... In a prison, I mean, it's absolutely unthinkable the things that happened to him there and the things that are going on in torture centres in Libya now, where we can't see into those prisons. You know, we don't know nobody's got any idea really what's happening inside those places, apart from that's why the testimony of somebody like Abdul is so important and powerful.
And it is incredibly powerful, having read it. And your strength, your mental strength, your strength of character, is quite extraordinary. Did you believe when you were in prison in Libya that you would escape, you would get out? Was there something inside you that spurred you on? Or did you think, this is it, I'm done?
I tried to escape. It's no choice for escape. Then, when I'm in prison, they beat me really hard. Then I'm really sick in hospital. Then, couple months in hospital, then open my eyes. I find this Russian doctors. So what happened, everything, you hear army hospital. Then I did all my whole story. My past happened. My family, everything. Then doctor said, okay, I can try to help you. Then get out in the hospital. Because that hospital is army hospital. Mm-hmm. Then after you're getting better, they return back to enjoy army again.
Yes. So there was only one way out, and that was for somebody to find you and say, I can find you a way out. And that was what this very kind Russian doctor did.
Yeah. Then I said, how can help me? He said, I am a doctor. I can give you cleaning in hospital, clothes. Then I'm calling a big, back bin.
So he disguised you as a cleaner, a hospital cleaner?
Yeah. Then that cleaner go inside that bin. Then he taken out. Then I can put in my car boot, back car.
In the boot of the car?
Yeah.
So you in a cleaner's uniform?
Yeah.
You ended up in a bin,
yeah,
and then into the boot of a car,
yeah,
and that's how you managed to escape the hospital in Libya.
In Libya,
at the hospital you'd been in,
yeah,
because you'd been so badly beaten,
yeah,
when you'd been imprisoned, because
yeah,
you wouldn't
right.
join the Children's Army of Gaddafi.
Yeah,
one thing that strikes me, Roz, is the kindness that punctuates Abdul's story amidst all the appalling inhumanity, there are examples of kindness. So Aboud, the man who showed you so much kindness.
Yeah.
And then the Russian doctor.
Yeah, Aboud and Russian doctor. The Russian doctor, they take him out. So I said, outside. So army outside, they check in the car. He said, no, I am a doctor. No one check my car. If check it, I'm going to die as well. He said, I paid someone, so no problem. Oh. That he did help me. Then about evening time, not really light and lamp things. So, okay, you three can go now. So Aboud and Russia doctor, that two things helped me. Then I was in army hospital.
So they were your first two real guardian angels in that part of your life, if you like. And then you found yourself in France.
Then
this boat to Marseille.
Then I went to mosque.
Yes.
Then I just played the mosque. Then I asked that some people find it. Some like living as well. I said, that prison calling Sirte. My place is calling Gaddafia. Different way, places. Mm-hmm. Then how I can catch the bus? Then I went to bus to find this bus, driving about taking 4 hours between Gaddafia to Sirte. Then I get in a bus say, can I have a ticket? Also, can I have an identity card? I did lie to the bus. I said, I am a Libyan. Even I think African or Sudanese, they're not taking it. I got really asked, Libyan asked and a half. Okay, get in. I got in a bus, I find some gate, like police checking things. I say I'm a Libyan, no problem. Then I find the Gaddafia. I find it Aboud. Aboud can't believe I'm come back to him. Because I left him 6 months. I never seen Aboud. I'm always present every night, beating very hard time. Then he paid up a bus. How much cost, I don't know. I can't remember, long time ago. So, again, Libya between us rebel and Gaddafi fighting. I went to mosque, I told her his story. An imam in mosque saying, I can help you. So many refugees, they went to France. How I can go to their place, Europe? So don't worry, stay with me, I can help you. Then he didn't help me. He done like some Red Cross. They told them I come with them France.
So that's how you
yeah.
got to France.
Yeah.
And again, a motif is that you reach every time you reach what you think is a safe place, there are dangers. So you go from Sudan to Chad, and as Rosa said, those camps in Chad are really bad.
Yes,
then you
right.
go from Chad to Libya. You think you've reached almost a safe place. There couldn't be a less safe place. You get from Libya to the port. You get from the port to Marseille. You think, well, you're in Europe. Do you think then you're in a safe place?
Even I didn't believe I came in France. Then 3 hour, 4 hour, every day like gun, nose, like banging. That's real. I can't believe myself. Then really peaceful. Then, yeah, that's I am now. Then what? I, in France, they come immigration, like refugee, like claiming like paperwork, everything. I don't know about claiming things. Then I have nice summer clothes, like African clothes. Go mosque, come back sometime. Most thing, you can't stay here anymore. Night time, place you stay. I don't have money. I stay in a park. Stay in France.
So you're a refugee, but you have no refuge. Because
no.
you can't go to the mosque. So you're sleeping in the park.
Yeah.
And to keep yourself warm, where do you sleep?
Yeah, then in a bin. Like, you know, a plastic bin?
So a big industrial bin.
Yeah. Because France, that time, sometimes frozen and too cold. So I have like so light clothes, summer clothes.
And there's the only clothes you've got?
No. It's frozen really bad. Then I stay that place, I feel a little bit warmer.
So you're in the bin, but
yeah.
obviously the
then
bin lorry
happened about
comes.
3 week time, then one night. So bin, one lorry coming collecting the bin between 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning. So then I knocked them. I go inside lorry, then I knocked them. Then they stopped them. Mm. Someone inside the bin, they are shouting really. Then call the police, then ambulance, the fire, then cut the lorry, like rubbish, everything inside, I mean too. Then ask my age, everything, I explained everything. Then.
Just remind us how old you were at this point.
That time I'm 13 years old.
13?
Yeah. That's 13 years old. Then, so you can climb a paper, like an identity card, said no. Where do you come from? From Sudan. How often you come here? Nearly 3 weeks. Then, I find it like 2 o'clock in the morning. Then, taking church, like please, you can stay in this room. Can I stay here, like give me like tuna sandwich in the morning. I go to mosque, night time come to church, then I find a place to stay, no outside the street. Then,
and so here's another kind person that
yes.
you found along the way.
Yeah,
the man who
in the church calling Antonio calling
speaks your language,
that it translates,
or you can communicate,
yeah. communicate, yeah.
And he gives you a tuna sandwich every day.
Yeah. Tuna sandwich.
Will you still eat, will you eat a tuna sandwich now or not?
I eat now, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Still, but that was what you lived on, essentially.
Yeah.
For that long. And he was the man who got you out.
Yeah, he did. He didn't help me as well. Then he set up the effort of going to England. You can hear England. That here, France, you know, very good places. So you can study, you can more. Life can improve. I said, how can I go there? They're between England and sea. Our people go here, that lorry is coming there. I said, you can pay for that. I said, no, I don't have any money. Nothing. How can I go there? Okay, don't worry. I can help you. Then, you see that lorry, yeah? You can see England flag, see? Yeah? I said, what do you mean England? England, this country, very peaceful. You can go there, you can study. You can life proof. How can I study? I've never been in college. I've never been in school in my life. So you can write and reading, they can teach you. You can improve your life. And he told me every day, then I find the other guy, he said, this guy all the time told me like, what do you think? I said, good idea, can I help you? Then, okay, how can I go to lorry? Then he teach me, how can people go inside the lorry? How can I go there? How can I climb in?
Now, this isn't about getting in the back of a lorry.
Yeah.
This is about getting in the tiny bit above the wheel arch.
Yeah.
Or just up in behind the wheel arch. So you have to hold.
Hold, yeah.
The whole time.
Hold it tight, yeah. Hold very tight. Then sometime 45 minutes, they think. Between 45 minutes, you've been in England there. I said, just don't drop it. Just hold it. So underneath, you have wheel.
Mm.
You can sit in wheel. You can tie it. That's calling something in Loria.
So how long did it take to get from Marseille to Swindon, holding on underneath the wheel arch?
I think Loria stopped one place. He said, stay. This guy told me, stay 2 hours or 3 hours. Don't come out.
Mm.
I said, okay. Then I can't hear a lorry noisy. The lorry stopped one place, no noisy, very silent, very dark. He told me that sometimes go underground, see, you can't feel anything. He said, don't scared, stay there. That after underground, see, I can't feel anything. I think underground. About half an hour, probably. I'm not sure exactly. Then I come England, Swindon, after underground, we're out. Lorry stop in Swindon station.
It's about 15 hours, isn't it, Ross?
I think so, yeah. I think it would be that level of journey, obviously with a few stops to refuel. Or, and Abdul had been told very wisely, don't get out. That's often how migrants are killed in that circumstance, because the lorry starts to move again and you've got no control. So Abdul just stayed in through these various different stops, obviously under the Channel Tunnel. And then the sort of miracle of Abdul's story, really, that he came out in horse racing country in Wiltshire, you know, having come from a culture that reveres horses and has a lot of horse racing. And it's just like, of all the places that he could have popped out of a lorry, like one that in the end has brought him into contact with horses has been amazing. And you just think how many people make that journey every day. I mean, you talked about the kindness that Abdul was shown. The foreword to our book is written by Lord Dubs, who came on the Kinder transport during World War II. And he talks in the foreword about how he came so differently from Abdul. And yet every refugee story is a story of kindness in the end. It's a story of horror, but it's always a story that somebody at some point was kind and helped you, otherwise you would not have survived.
The other point I wanted to make was, yes, it was hugely fortunate for us in the horse racing industry that Abdul landed in Swindon and loves horses and ended up at Greatwood and then with Nicky Evans and then back to Kingsclear. On the other hand, Abdul, when you did arrive and you go through the processing of being a refugee and seeking asylum in this country, that wasn't easy either. And you were in a number of different homes in and around the Swindon area where you had to adapt to life in Britain. And that in itself was difficult, wasn't it?
Yes. So everything happened to me. When I saw I can do something, I remember. Actually, I kept in my mind. So, yeah, asylum seeker is not easy, very hard. How can get, improve your life. So, horses, I love horses very much. Because when I inside the yard, I was touching horses or riding horses, my memory, I'm thinking back home, is Sudan. Always. I go inside, yeah, try touching horses or riding. I feel my back home.
And so that takes you back to memories of your grandfather and
yeah.
and your parents and those early days in Sudan.
Yeah, that's right.
So it gives you that connection.
Yeah, that gives me powerful. Like, feel make me happy.
We've got some footage, I think, of Abdul riding. And this was very early on, Abdul, wasn't it? This was with Nikki.
Yeah, just
Evans. In Abergavenny.
Yeah.
And how helpful was she?
Oh, she did help me a lot.
And this is just 3-4 years ago?
That about 4 years ago.
4 years ago.
Yeah, 2016.
And not long after this, you won the Daily Mirror Pride of Sport Awards.
Yes.
And I know you met Claire.
Well, after that, I went to Northern Racing College.
Northern Racing College, yeah.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about your time there.
North Racing College, I've been there 4 months. I normally stay 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. Then my riding not very good. I told the college manager, I said, can I stay another 1 more month? Then they said, okay, I will call Annalisa in the building. Mm-hmm. I do want to stay another 1 month more riding, improve riding. They saying, Annalisa saying, okay, no problem. I stay 1 more, like 4 months, North Racing College, Doncaster. Then I come here in Newbury.
Did you enjoy it, the Northern Racing College?
Oh, I did a lot enjoy it. It started starting very hard. So I enjoy it a lot. Because sometimes horses, it's winter time, horses more fresh. More horses, hard rider, then get more riding proof more. Even when you fall off, you're getting better. Because next day, why you fall off, what happened to you, you know, you can understand.
And did you start to feel like part of something again? Did you start to feel like you were part of a family again a little bit?
Yes. As soon as I'm looking for my brother again, I'm still looking for.
Yes.
I'm calling Yusuf.
And this is really now everything that drives you, yes, to look for your brother Yusuf.
Yes.
And just to go back, you became separated because you were the older. You were the elder.
Yeah, I'm older, yeah. He's younger than me.
And so it was considered that you could go further afield to work, to try with Aboud, your family friend, who was your sort of guardian, to go into Libya.
Yes, I'm still looking for. Libya at the moment, not a very safe country.
No.
But now my memory, I'm thinking Kenya. Some refugees, they live in Kenya. And Chad, so I'm still looking for.
And you will never stop looking for him?
No, I can't.
Of course you can't. Roz, you're obviously going to try and help Abdul as much as he can look for Yusuf, and Abdul has obviously narrowed down areas where he might conceivably be. Given what this man has already done, far be it from me to say that this can't be done, because it clearly can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to keep that hope alive, don't we, Abdul, to think that Yusuf might be there. Maybe in writing this book, people will hear about Yusuf Musa Adam. How old would he be, Yusuf? 18.
About 18, yeah.
About 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he looks a lot like Abdul.
He looked like me, absolutely. That's why I wrote the book, because this book is published. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book, you can address my number, my Facebook, everything. That can go to the villages and countries. Maybe this book, that's why I'm writing this book. So this book helpful. So many refugees, different countries. Some refugees in the villages, some villages can go Red Cross. So that's why Rose helped me about this book. And Philip.
And the day of Abdul's citizenship ceremony, just the day in Swindon we went and Abdul was becoming a British citizen, that day was the same day all of those migrants died in a lorry in Essex. So it was that morning. So you're always aware that these stories can end in two ways. They can end as Abdul's story has ended, or they can end in just horrific tragedy. And I think we have to think as a country, how do we deal with refugees, and especially child refugees, which at the moment we seem to be tightening up on child refugees coming to the country instead of maybe welcoming people. There's only in the country, there's only 0.1% refugees or something. It's a tiny minority of our population, and I think Abdul's story shows that a lot of bit of humanity goes a long way.
And you have been shown those examples of humanity along the way, but you yourself must have extraordinary belief and extraordinary belief in your own ability to survive all of what's happened to you. Do you believe in your heart that your brother Yusuf shares what you have? And is that what is making you believe that he could end up being in the position that you're in?
Yes, I do believe that things. Sometimes he absolutely looks like me. A very hard worker. I know him because he was young. We look after animal. He like 4 years old. Like horse is too bigger. I'm 6 years old. He tired. I can't carry up. Sheep, according to sheep. Sheep can walk, you know what I mean? He worked very hard. Sometimes get like adopted very hard. Mm-hmm. Find it. Because that sometimes adopted, they're changing names. That is hard. I can't believe I can find it one day.
And as you say, he looks just like you. You say he is very similar. And people from that area, Roz, from where Abdul and Yusuf were originally from, there would be connections running through, wouldn't there?
Yes, I think they would. And there was generally within sort of displaced Darfuri communities, there are obviously connections. I mean, Chad is one of the biggest countries on earth. It's absolutely enormous, and it's definitely a needle in a haystack to try to find somebody there.
Yeah.
But we're hoping, and it may be that Yusuf got taken off to Germany or Holland, or you know, was part of one of those refugee airlifts. So he could literally be anywhere.
I'm gonna say, if anyone can, you can. I think on what I've heard so far, how much has it affected you positively meeting Abdul, given your own experience as a writer and journalist in that part of Africa?
I worked in that part of Africa for probably about 5 years on and off in different bits of it, from Rwanda, Sudan, Chad, all sorts of different countries, Kenya. And it had quite a traumatic effect on me, as I think it does on many journalists when you're kind of covering famines and wars and all these sorts of things. But I guess, you know, it's not my family, so I can't imagine how horrendous it must be to witness some of the things that I've witnessed, but for that to be my family or my people or my village or... But I think the way working together on the book over the last couple of years has been therapeutic in some ways for both of us, I think, that we've talked about a lot of experiences that we've shared and thought about a lot of the places. And quite often we have just talked about the food or what the light is like or kind of, you know, silly things about Africa. And that's been a really nice part of the process too, because I think we both love Africa, don't we?
Yes.
And still the animal gives you that connection with your homeland. Do you have ambitions for yourself as well now in your life here in Britain?
Can you repeat again, please?
What do you hope for you? For riding, racing, your life here?
Really good. I racing, riding, take horses for a racing as well. So more riding. So usually we have 5 o'clock every morning. We start 6 o'clock in the morning. Then 6 o'clock, we start working 7, but 6 o'clock you start having breakfast before, so you can change your clothes as well. You're ready for work. Then finishing 12:30. Now we got 6 o'clock, start the more horses. After I go riding, I feel more happy. Then just I thump so many things, I thinking, how can I find this? That's my brother, Yusuf. So I feeling like that is my home now. Because more country, this country most peaceful for everyone.
It's been a real pleasure to meet you.
Yes.
And I hope that we in our tiny, tiny little way can make sure that your face and name are pushed as widely as possible so that as many people as possible see you, and who knows, one of those people may know someone who knows someone who knows Yusuf, and that's what we'll hope for you, and I think we're very fortunate to have you with us working in horse racing as well, and I'm sure you'd agree, Roz.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the kindness shown by obviously Annalisa and Andrew Balding, by Ira, Abdul's amazing stepmom and Philip, and, you know, has just, it's been amazing. And just for Abdul to have that routine, the physical work, the just knowing when things are happening, like all of that stuff is a really important part of Abdul's recovery, and the fact that he's contributing so much is kind of goes against that narrative that we see about refugees, that they're scroungers or they're, you know, nobody, few people work as hard as Abdul, I would say. I don't think I do.
And also for anyone who's ever been on or worked on this program, you and I were saying just before we started this interview that we've all basically been put to shame by what is comfortably the most impressive suit that's been worn in this studio for quite some time. So clearly the smartest as well as the hardest working. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome,
Abdul, and good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Roz, thanks.
Brilliant.
So much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
For coming in. Abdul Musa Adam and Roz Wynne-Jones. We will be right back after this.